Hi, I'm Alison. Welcome to Dream Chasers Adventures in Happiness, where my band of superhero guests and I share with you tales of derry-do, life-changing journeys towards living our best lives. If you're after an injection of inspiration and ideas to live the life that you want and deserve, you're in the right place. Let's dive in.
Hi there, and welcome to the show where we serve up conversation, concepts, and belief that it is entirely possible to create what you crave. If there's something stopping you from pursuing happiness, whatever that looks like to you from a career or lifestyle point of view, the stories and insights covered here are designed to help. Today, I am bringing my fabulous friend Paul Spires back to talk about the subject of creativity. Now, the reason I'm interested in this is that when it comes to figuring out the life and career changes that will make us feel the happiest and most fulfilled and most alive, we need to be creative, right? We need to be able to free our minds up to think beyond our current setup and experience and really allow ourselves to imagine what could be possible. But that can be really hard to do, especially if you're someone who feels trapped by your current circumstances or weighed down by reality or potentially deem yourself an uncreative person. You know, all of this it sort of kills inspiration and ideas, making it impossible to conjure up our best life, which means you can't then go after it. Now, I've asked Paul back on the show because he's a real thought leader on creativity. Although he'll probably laugh at me for using that description. He's genuinely one of the smartest and most creative people that I know and that I've ever worked with. And part of his work as the founder of the new P&L Institute and podcast is giving global keynote speeches and moderating panels and roundtables for businesses all around the subject of creative thinking and the future of innovation and how to nurture our innate curiosity. So today, I'm going to pick Paul's brains about how to be creative. You know, how do we ignite our curiosity? How do we get into a creative zone? Are there any environmental factors that make a difference? And what do we do if we're not a naturally creative person? You know, then what? So let's get into it. Welcome back to the show, Paul.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Good to be here.
Thank you for coming back. So I thought it probably makes sense to start. Can we start by defining creativity? Like for you, what does it mean or involve?
Yeah, I mean, I think in a way, this is part of the problem, you know, that defining what creativity is part of our challenge because we all bring so much subjectivity to defining it. And we look at someone or we look at something and we decide that they're creative. And then we proceed to build a bit of a reductionist argument in our own head about our own comparative lack of creativity. So I think actually defining creativity is a fundamental part of the perception that some of us are more creative than others, or some of us, you know, don't have the requisite levels of creativity. So we're really good at seeing it, creativity. We're not so good at recognizing it in ourselves, I think. So I think to define it, there needs to be, I think in my mind, a bit of a split between creativity, which is the output effectively, and creative thinking, innovative thinking, ideation, and so on, the start of that process, which we all have, you know. And it probably feels a little bit pedantic, but I think it's really important because defining creativity in the subjective way we do is stopping a lot of people from engaging in their natural sense of curiosity, because it's, we all possess it in very, very different ways. You know, I love music. I'm pretty average at it, but I love it. I like writing, entrepreneurship. And then you think about, you know, my dad, he was a builder, which some of us wouldn't think of as creativity or creative, but he had to find, you know, multiple creative solutions to the challenges he had when he was building a house. And he used to drive us around Paraparaumu when I was a kid and show us all the houses he'd built, and they were his own kind of works of art. So rather than defining it, I'd like to look at it a bit differently, not what it is, but how do we express it? You know, how does it come from us internally rather than that external definition, I think.
I love that. I've never thought about it that way. That's why I've got you on this show. So, complete distinction, because you're absolutely right. And actually, this leads me on to my next question, because another thing, you know, this, I was definitely in this camp years ago. Like, I had huge self-doubt about the fact that well, I just thought I was not a creative person, right? And you know, so I was doing that whole compare and despair thing and looking at other people and going, that's not me. You know, so can any of us be creative? You know, can we tap into our innate creativity? You know, even if we deem ourselves to be a thoroughly uncreative person.
100%. I mean, we it's not that we're not creative. We're probably not identifying where we are creative, you know, and sometimes you want to be creative in a place that perhaps you don't have such a natural sense of creativity, but we're all creative in one way or another. You know, I'd love to be able to paint, but I am unbelievably shit at it. But I also think that with a few lessons and with a bit of application and focus, I could probably get to be okay at it, you know. So but I'm creative other ways, and everyone has a creative bent in one way or another. In the same way as there are some great runners, but that doesn't make them a great rugby player or a great surfer. You know, we all have certain sports areas where we're perhaps more inclined to be. I think there's also, and this is where our ego gets in the way, often with creativity, we want to be a great potter or something. So we go and we try to shape a lump of clay and it doesn't work out. And our ego gets in the way and it tells us that we're crap. And so we give it up. But actually, creativity is a muscle. You've got to, like everything else in life, you've got to exercise it. You've got to keep working at it. You've got to get better and better. 100-meter sprinters don't become world champions in a day. They train for years to become that. And exercising our creative muscle is exactly the same. And you know, ask any entrepreneur, the idea is the easy bit. It's the 90% perspiration, you know, that old adage, 10% inspiration, 90% perspiration. It's convincing everyone else that it's a great idea. That's the challenge. So creativity can be fun, but it's also, you've got to exercise that muscle. It can be hard work.
So I want to come back to this because that's a really interesting point that, again, I had never thought about. So I just thought I'd share. So years ago, I did deem myself totally uncreative, even though I was in a comms and kind of creative-y role technically. I distinctly remember that there was a point in time where things changed, and it was because a friend of mine, somebody I used to work with, in fact it was Eleanor Willock, who has been on this podcast,
right.
She gave me a book on creativity because I deemed her really creative, because she is, and she gave me this book to read. I distinctly remember at the beginning of the book it had a field study. And it talks about how they had taken two completely randomized groups of people, and there was no difference between, you know, these people. They didn't pick them for any particular reason. They were just different groups of people. And there was only one thing that they did differently with each of them. They were going to give them a task to do, like a creative task to do, and they had to work on it and solve a problem. And with one group, whoever it was that was introducing it walked into the room and said, right, everybody, you know, you've all been chosen because you are naturally creative. And here is the task we're setting. And, you know, you need to solve it in as quickly as time as possible. Off you go. And with the other control group, the same person walked in and said, right, everybody, you know, I know, you know, none of you have been chosen because you're particularly creative. You know, you're probably quite average. But here is a task. We want you to work together. Here you go, you know, time it, off you go. And they did this multiple times over in a controlled environment, and the results were staggering, right? Yeah. So there was technically, one group was not more creative than the other, but just because one group was told they were and the other was told they weren't, the difference in the timing on how quickly they resolved the problem was massive. Right? Yeah. And they did it time and time and time again. And so when I read this, I was like, it was like a penny drop moment for me. Yeah. So I was like, basically, if you tell yourself you're creative, you are. or you'll be more creative.
I think that's true. You know, that's the argument with everything in life, isn't it? It's visualization, it's reinforcement.
Yeah.
It's, you know, all of those telling yourself that you can do it rather than you can't. It's the mind games as much as anything else. And, you know, you might have someone, I don't know, it's cliche, but you might have someone in the accounts department and you don't consider them naturally creative because you're in marketing and they're an accountant or whatever, but then you find out they're an extraordinary cello player, or they're a landscape painter in the weekends. You know, it's where we apply our creativity. And too often, ironically, I think with creativity, we box it. You know, we box it up and we say, well, I can do this over here, but this isn't really my creative bent. But to your point with the study, you know, if we're all stuck in a forest, we pretty quickly find creative ways to get out of that forest. Working parents who have to be in four places at once, the creative thinking that comes in to play at 3 o'clock in an afternoon where they've got to pick up the kids and be on the phone and do this and do something else. We find the creativity when we need to, and that's, you know, it's a shame that sometimes we only find it when we need to rather than exercising that muscle when we want to and when we can.
Yeah. Okay. So let's take that. So just to finish that story of mine. So when I recognized this, what I did was just decide to be that I was creative. That was the only thing that changed. And the difference a year later was hilarious to me because people started to call me creative, which I just thought was so funny at the time. But it was just because I decided that that's what it was. So it was very much a mindset thing. But let's get into what you were talking about creating a kind of muscle. Because I think that's also because if you decide you are, or it's a mindset, and then you start to apply it on a regular basis and kind of just have a go, it can make a difference. So how do you exercise that creative, that muscle? Like, are there particular things, you know, for example, that you do? You know, what fuels your ability to be creative? Have you got any routines or activities or things that you do that, like, spark your imagination and get your creative flow going?
Yeah, I mean, and this is a slightly sort of fluffier example, but creativity relies fundamentally on curiosity. You know, if you think about curiosity as the food for creativity, you can't be creative in any shape or form in life if you're not curious about things, because all of those things that you're curious about consciously and subconsciously, they go into the back of your brain. They sit there and wait to come together, to draw the red threads together when you want to deliver something creatively. So being more conscious in the moment and doing more things that provoke and invoke your curiosity will give you the foundation, the food, the nutrition your creativity needs. And a couple of things you can do from a curiosity perspective. One is be more conscious in more moments, you know, actually make a set an alarm or do whatever it happens to be, but be more curious about things, ask more questions. Another is, we've got this amazing thing here, phone. Now that is either a conduit to an amazing curation of curiosity, or it is something that will distort, diminish, or dilute it, depending on how we use it. So we can either use this to just swipe and wipe and stare and not care and remove our natural sense of curiosity and allow the algorithm to do our thinking for us. Mm. Or we can use it as the most amazing curation tool, that we see something, it might be online, and we get a screen grab of it. We see something in the street, we take a capture of it. We think of something, we do an audio note. Mm. We see something else, we take a video. And then the important thing is, we've got the most amazing curation tool in the history of humankind, but if it just sits on that phone, we've got no way of revisiting it. So you've got to drag it down, which I do quite often. I capture a lot of things each week. I make a conscious effort. And again, the more you do take that conscious effort, the more you exercise it. And then a couple of times each week, I'll drag everything down into a file. I'll revisit it. I'll look at it against the things I'm doing in work or in my own life, what might apply now. And I keep going back and revisiting and revisiting and revisiting that ever-increasing file constantly. Mm. The amount of ideas that I've had for my business and for my personal life that have come out of that simple exercise of curating and revisiting has been extraordinary.
So you've got a real system for it. Yeah. Like, so you are deliberately and consciously capturing stuff that just takes your interest in whatever form, whether it's a photo or a piece of information or something you hear or read or whatever, and you're actually filing it somewhere and consciously going back to it to go through it to kind of connect dots. And
because I think there's a misunderstanding. You know, people think, oh, creativity, free flow, form, and all of the rest of it, and that's true, but creativity needs freedom and it needs a framework, you know. So you have to apply yourself, you have to frame whether it's the curation in my example, but it actually needs direction. You know, directionless creativity is a little bit redundant, particularly in a business sense. But, you know, if you sit down to paint as well, what are you going to paint? You've got to have something in your head. There's a framework always that you're going to structure a song. You know, how are you going to write it? You start by building chords. That's a framework for that song to apply the lyrics to, or whatever it happens to be. So I think there's a misunderstanding, really, fundamental misunderstanding, that creativity has to be just free-flowing, but actually it needs direction, like all of us in life. It needs a framework to build to.
That's really interesting, because it's making me think, like, so for me, a lot of the time it's like my best creative ideas come when I drop out, like when I become mindless almost. Which happens quite a lot.
Yeah, me too.
So typically, like, usually if I'm on holiday, if I've taken some time out and I'm somewhere, like, and I'll give an example. It was years ago when I was on holiday, and Jeremy and I, my husband, got up at, like, super early in the morning. So we were on a beach like 5 o'clock in the morning, like when there was nobody around. It was just silent. It was beautiful. I went for this massive walk down the beach, my feet in the water, and I was completely present. Like, there was nothing in my head at all.
Yeah.
And as I was walking down, suddenly I just got this massive download of ideas that came to me. And I'd obviously been mulling this stuff over. But what downloaded was effectively the crux of what is now my career change program.
Yes. Yeah.
And it originally started as a book that I wrote. And so all of these ideas came for the types of things I could include in this book. And then the book became an online course, and the online course became a coaching program. So there is a point of, like you said, of free form and free fall. And I think that that's quite important, or it certainly is for me. But then, like you said, putting a framework to it. So what I did with that is I went back to the hotel room. I had a little notebook and I started to scribble, and I just captured all of the stuff, and it was a big mishmash of things. And then I worked that, and I worked at it for a long time to turn it into the framework of a book in its first iteration. And so, there was a framework to it afterwards.
Yeah. And I think, without dragging the sort of the muscle analogy into it again, if you think the example you've given is a really good one, and we think about Archimedes and the bar, Eureka and all the rest of these things, often the best ideas come when you're in the shower, when you're going for a walk, when you're doing whatever, because I think it is almost like, to use that exercise analogy again, they always talk about rest days when you're working out at the gym. You might work out Monday, Tuesday, but you rest on Wednesday, and it's on the Wednesday when your muscles grow. And so if you're working hard on your creativity, trying to come up with ideas, researching and doing everything else, then that example of the beach is your rest day, where all of the work that you've done in the previous 2 days, whatever, 20 days, then you've set out that freedom, you've allowed it to come forth. Because when you push yourself too much in that moment, the ideas don't always come, because your brain is too stressed. You're thinking about too many things. It needs a freedom at that point. So you do all your research, you do everything, you set the framework out. I need a new solution to X, Y, Z, whatever it happens to be. You do all of the research, you put all of that into your brain, and then you take your rest day, to use the analogy again, from the exercising, and then the ideas start to come forward.
It's a really interesting point, because that whole idea, and I think, I've definitely been here in the past, and it's that idea of forcing, I must come up with the answer. And I talk about this, from a career or life change perspective, when you're unhappy and you want to make a change, but you're not sure what that change is, and you're trying really hard to figure it out, and you end up just going round and round in circles, because that forcing sort of, it does the opposite. It does for me anyway. It shuts your brain down.
Yes.
Whereas actually, and it's partly, when I'm working with anybody, I try, I say right from the very beginning, we're going to make this fun. It's going to feel like play. Because number one, why the hell not? But number two, I think if you experiment and you have fun with it and you're playful in the approach to it, you're much more likely to come to an answer and a feel-good one than sort of trying to push your way through and kind of overanalyze it. So, but I never really thought about that. So kind of free form, do the research, free form, and then free form it for it to kind of come down, and then put a framework to it afterwards.
Yeah, so walk away from the problem, they're kind of walking away from the problem. Often when we're faced with a problem at work and we're sitting in front of our screens, literally sitting in front of our screens, and then we go and make a cup of coffee, and then all of a sudden the solution kind of appears. It's not that the solution wasn't there, but we needed to remove ourselves physically from the moment to enable those things to come forth. And that's all it is, really. It's just we're doing the hard work, providing the foundation, doing the curiosity, the research, everything else. Then we're giving ourselves some freedom to come up with the idea, to do the ideation. walking away from the immediate vicinity, or however we do it, a walk in the forest or whatever. But then to your example about the book and the course and everything else, I think I said this in the last conversation we had, you know, ideas are nothing without intention and intention's nothing without action. So those ideas would have always just been ideas had you not sat down and said, right, how do I bring this idea to fruition? How do I translate a great idea into, you know, discernible action? It's going to be a book here. It's going to be a course here. It's going to be that. Otherwise, that ideas only exist. Ideas are nothing without action.
Well, absolutely right. Absolutely right. So, you know, I'm just thinking about somebody listening to this and thinking about, okay, so it kind of starts with curiosity, as you said, because nothing is born without curiosity. Are there particular things that people can do to spark their curiosity? So like you said, for you, like you're obviously very conscious about this, and you go out and you capture things and whatever, and you have your system. Are there other things people can do to kind of wake up their curiosity? Or, you know, like, is it like...
Yeah, I mean, they're really simple things, like, which seem silly, but they are really simple things. So like in London, for example, if you walk around London, you've got one London on the ground floor, and if you look up in London, you've got an entirely different story, literally and figuratively, second story up. And even if you look up as you walk around rather than down staring into your phone, you see a completely different side of London on the second story up, because the bottom stories are mainly shops. You look up and you've got all these incredible buildings that provoke lots of curiosity. Why is that? What's that blue plaque there? What was that building 200 years ago? Whatever it happens to be. Take a different way to work each day. You know, look at different things. One exercise that I recommend in some of the creativity and curiosity workshops I do, and I've been doing this for about 18 months, and it's been probably the most groundbreaking transformational thing I've done in terms of my curiosity in the last couple of years. Since ChatGPT came out, what I've done is every Friday, usually Friday, for about 15, 20 minutes, I will start by writing down, let's say, two challenges or opportunities I have in business, or maybe it's my personal life, but usually it's business. I write down those two challenges for this week. And then I will pick up my phone and use social media, or magazines or whatever it happens to be. It could be a collection of things. But for 15 minutes, if it's a phone, I will scroll with intent. So I will look at every single post rather than just swiping and wiping. I'll look at every single post and I'll think about what piques my interest in that post. What's intriguing about that post? What's different about that post? What's interesting about that story? What don't I know? You know, is it, I don't know, it might be a story about Madagascar. What do I know about Madagascar? Not a lot. So I write down Madagascar. And then I will choose five things through scrolling that I'd like to learn a little bit more about, that I perhaps haven't or don't know much about. At the end of that 15 minutes, I will then take each of those five things that I've selected, and I will put each in turn into ChatGPT or other generative AI are available, into ChatGPT, and I will say, tell me the top 10 things I need to know about Madagascar, with citations for argument's sake, and then it'll give me the top 10 things. Then I'll do the next one, the next one, the next one. So then I have 50 things, 10 things about each of these five topics that I know little about. And then I'll print them off and I'll sit down on the weekend and I'll read about them. The amount of books and subsequent inquiry and research that I've done over the last 18 months and knowledge expansion and curiosity that I've done as a result of doing that simple exercise every Friday or every other Friday is extraordinary. The amount of things I've learned, then I'm reading those top 10 things about topic A, and then I think, oh, that's interesting. So then I do a bit of research on that. And then after a period of time, you start to draw links between seemingly inconsequential subjects that you have that have piqued your interest. You can see the link between this thing you looked at 3 weeks ago and the link that and what you're reading about now. It's been an unveiling, a total unveiling of knowledge and curiosity and things that have helped my creativity, that have piqued my interest. Those two challenges that I write down each week, sometimes I will try and align those with the stories that I'm reading and the topics that I'm researching, and finding solutions for those challenges and the bits of research I'm doing in that 15 minutes. But the key is just do it for 15 minutes and just choose five things and just put in the top 10 things about them, and then taking half an hour on a Sunday or whatever to read about them. That's been a life-changing exercise for me in terms of reinvigorating my curiosity.
Wow. That would never have occurred to me. I'm going to give this a go now.
It's fun.
The basic thing that I do, and I get clients doing, is just to start that kind of, you know, like boosting your curiosity and kind of making life feel a little bit more exciting, adding a little bit of zhuzh to it. I give people an exercise called change it up, which is a little what you were talking about around, you know, when you were saying look up. But I encourage people to just make tiny changes to the things that they do every day, right? Because we're quite routined as human beings. We tend to get into a rut and we do the same things over and over. So we take the same routes to work. We eat the same types of food or order the same types of things off a menu or, you know, go to the same shops. Yeah. And so I challenge people to just do something slightly different, you know, so go into your local town and go to a shop or a place that you've never, walk into somewhere you've never actually been just to see what's in there. I did this last weekend in my local town in Abergavenny, and I walked into a bakery I'd never been in and realised that they sell all sorts of things rather than just like baked goods, which was amazing. And then I walked into a wine shop, because clearly I walked into a wine shop, and I realised it was a wine bar as well as a wine shop. So I was like, who knew? So, but it just adds new sort of inputs that help spark ideas and kind of, like you said, links. So it could be as simple as that or you know, making a new recipe, trying new food that you know, in a new way.
I mean, the wonderful thing is none of this is rocket science. It just takes a little bit of effort, you know, and we're already doing all of the things that we could be doing with a bit more curiosity. You know, we're still, if we go to work, we're still walking to work. So walk a different way. If, as you said, if you're going to Abergavenny, then don't go to the same shops, go to different shops. Most of the curiosity that we need is already found in the places and the things that we're doing. It's just taking a different perspective to the things. We're far less spontaneous than we like to think we are. We like to think we're pretty, you know, unique and quirky and everything else. But actually, most of us, as you said, have a very fixed routine, and it's just breaking us out of that routine a little bit.
Yeah. And I suppose that links to, I mean, I'm assuming that kind of speaks to the whole environmental factors question that I raised at the beginning, which is you know, are there other environmental factors other than changing things up or kind of it being like going to new places, or you know, are there particular environmental factors that improve our ability to be creative beyond that kind of thing?
I mean, there probably are, but I think actually, you know, whether you are walking through centre of London or whether you're walking in the Lake District, there are equal levels of curiosity to be had. The environment is less important than the outlook that we have upon it. You know, we can find in my lounge here, I could find lots of things to be curious about, and this is a tiny lounge, but there are lots of things to be curious about. So it's less about the environment and more about your perspective on it, and just, you know, jolting yourself into the opportunity to ask more questions, to be a little bit more curious. You know, again, it's that old cliche of, you know, kids asking why is the sky blue, and yet at some point we kind of lose so much of that natural sense of curiosity, and algorithms are doing even more of that. They're really diluting our natural sense of curiosity. We're not even having to think anymore, you know. There's a podcast I did recently about creativity, actually. And, you know, if we think about technology, which is wonderful, technology is incredible, and I'm a massive advocate. I think it's what it's delivered us in the last 20 years is phenomenal. But what apps and other technologies are trying to do is they're creating frictionless environments. So, you know, you want to order food, all you need to do is download the app, Just Eat, whatever it happens to be, and all of a sudden, you know, there's someone at the door. Frictionless, totally frictionless. But there is massive creativity to be had in the friction. And so we can embrace frictionless, but actually the fun, the creativity, the curiosity, the self-satisfaction in many regards is to be found in the friction. If we just picked up a guitar and played like Jimmy Page or, you know, Jimi Hendrix, Well, where's the learning process? Where's the developmental process? Where's the excitement of learning your first song and saying to your partner or your children, I've just learned a guitar, solo or whatever it happens to be. So, and that's friction, trying to get from here to here in the learning process. So we've got to embrace the friction rather than always, we're getting programmed into thinking the whole world needs to be frictionless, whereas actually there's fun and creativity to be found in the friction.
I love that. Well, that's a beautiful place to end, that is. There's fun in the friction. Listen, Paul, it's been amazing having you back on the show. And thanks so much for sharing your amazing wisdom on creativity. If anyone's interested in learning more about you and the new P&L Institute and podcast and your brilliant keynotes and workshops on creativity as well as other stuff, where can they find you?
Go to principlesandleadership.com, or probably the best place is to go to LinkedIn and just type in Paul Spires, S-P-I-E-R-S. And that's just direct message me or contact me there. That's probably the easiest way to connect with me. Yeah.
Fab. Well, thank you again.
Thanks, Ali. Been fun.
Okay. It has been fun. That's it for this episode. Thank you so much for joining us. And I really hope it's given you some proper food for thought and new ideas for boosting your imagination and creativity and curiosity, particularly when it comes to pinpointing what makes you most happy in work and life. If you know anyone who would benefit from listening to this conversation and Paul's fabulous insights, please do share this episode. And until next time, just know that I believe in you and in your ability to be creative and discover your own unique happiness markers. So go do your thing.
Thank you for listening today. I hope our time together has got you thinking about your own adventure in happiness. So please do get in touch. I'd love to hear more about your story. And why not join our Dream Chasers Unite community? There is nothing better than an adventure shared. Until next time, be brave and go create what you crave.